The Barking Carnival Unplugged podcast contains mature themes and adult language. It should be considered not safe for work, and it's not to be consumed around children, the elderly, or Methodists. The opinions contained in this podcast are those of the hosts alone, and do not represent the opinions of SB Nation or the University of Texas. Chris Del Conte has disavowed all knowledge of this podcast. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here. Hello, Longhorn fans. Welcome to another edition of the Barking Carnival Unplugged podcast, a reveling in victory edition as the Longhorns sit at 1-0 in the Big 12 Conference. My name is Jason Chilton, a.k.a. Nova 60. With me, as always, Jacob Dedamore, a.k.a. Kip's Big Boy, and the great Craig Douglas, a.k.a. Willie Waylon McClyde, coming to you live from Mount Thunder. Gentlemen, what do we think about 1-0?
I don't know what we think about 1-0, but I know that we're taping this or recording it. I just showed my age while we're watching the Browns and the Rams on Sunday Night Football. So if all sudden outbursts every time Baker Mayfield shits the bed are going to have to be excused.
I think the fan base and our listenership will pardon you on those counts, sir.
And speaking of shit, the color of those Browns uniform looked like...
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it looked like something that splattered the side of the bowl and stuck.
Oh, goodness gracious. And we're off to a great start.
So yep, yep.
How we feel about 1-0 and 3-1? We feel great because it was a huge win, but at the same time, we are now the walking wounded. Because, I mean, we'll get into the injuries here in a bit and what we know at this point. But a phenomenal win over a team that for the last almost decade has had our number at Texas. The mullet has been, you know, has basically been our daddy for the last few years. As, you know, even I was unaware that Texas had lost 5 in a row at home to Oklahoma State and 7 of the last 9. I didn't think it was that had gotten to that point, but it had. And they ground out a win despite all efforts in the fourth quarter to give it away, but found a way to come away with the W, and it was a win over, you know, what may end up being the third best team in this conference.
Well, the score was not indicative of how well Texas played, you know, but for the two muff punts, I think, you know, they could have won the game by, you know, at least another score, maybe another 2 scores. And overall, I mean, I think I was pretty pleased with how the defense played. It seemed like they had a definite game plan. You know, didn't like look like that Orlando was out there doing a bunch of, you know, throwing shit at the wall and doing a bunch of call matching, guessing games. And I was pleased with the effort.
Yeah, I agree. I think we finally saw a cohesive defensive game plan. And it was one they stuck to even when guys started dropping like flies in the second half in the secondary.
Yeah, seeing Texas come out, you stay in a two-high shell all night, essentially dare Gundy to beat him on the ground, which he was more than happy to keep trying to do to the tune of, I think, 37 carries for Chuba Hubbard, Chuba Hubbard, Chumbawamba, whatever.
What is your name, boy?
It's a bad flashback, Chumbawamba.
Oh, God.
37 carries, 121 yards, net average of 3.3 yards a carry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, you know, he kind of choked the game down himself. I mean, he represented... I'll figure it out. Go ahead.
That was kind of the story of the game, and there's plenty of positives and some negatives to get into. I think we'll hit the positives first. But, yeah, to me, the difference in that game was it was very ground-heavy on both sides. Basically, both teams were dared to run into 5 or 5.5-man boxes, and Texas was a lot more efficient doing so, you know, thanks to a terrific effort from the offensive line and, you know, the best game, probably by a good stretch, of his young Longhorn career for Keontae Ingram, who was running like a man, even though he is maybe 20?
Yeah, maybe 20. Yeah, I mean, that was definitely his best game. And you're right, the offensive line was great. They never, I mean, I don't think they really came after Sam all that much in passing downs. It seemed like they were playing a lot of coverage, OSU was, but they never sniffed him on pass plays. The pass protection was excellent. The run blocking was very good. You know, I mean, sure, there were plays here and there where Oklahoma State made some plays in the run game, especially late when they were stacking the box. But overall, it was a fantastic job. The stars of the game, were the defensive line last night, everybody that rotated in, because they were given a pretty big job to do. Because as you said, it was going to be a two deep shell. We're going to double cover Tylan Wallace, not let him get loose. Guys, you're going to have to run a light box and try and somehow slow down this run game. And they did. They did a fantastic job. Taquan Graham had his best game as a Longhorn. Keandre Coburn probably had his best game as a Longhorn last night. You had some great plays from Malcolm Roach. You know, he even made some plays when you could tell he was fucking exhausted in the fourth quarter, because I think he played like 70 snaps last night. He was worn out. You had contributions from Ojomo and Bimage. I mean, everybody that went in there last night gave effort and contributed to doing what they could to slow down that Oklahoma State offense.
Yeah, even young Hefty, Tavondre Sweat, made his presence felt a few times.
Yes, he did.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard to overstate how tough a job we give the defensive line, you know, with this scheme and setup, and now we're kind of locked into it. We don't really hardly have the ability to play, you know, a four man front all that often, really, unless you're dropping Osai down or something like that, having him put his hand on the ground, which he could do. But you know, we're pretty well locked into, we've got three guys, they're lining up for the most part at four eyes inside, so you are having to fight your ass off to get pass pressure, and you are being asked to hold the point of attack, you're being asked to penetrate, you know, a lot of times winning a two-on-one matchup to do so, and they all just played out of their mind last night in another hot-ass September evening. It's not weather built for the big boys.
I've waited my entire life to penetrate on a two-in-one matchup.
You know, the other guys...
God, this is bad.
But it was on brand. the other guys that just deserve kudos, even though they did have their issues, were the guys in the secondary last night, especially the ones that were left on the field at the end of the game after we lost multiple guys last night. For those who haven't heard, let's just knock out the injury stuff real quick. Josh Thompson looks like he's done for the year with a broken foot. The report is he's going to have surgery, and he still has a red shirt that he can use, thankfully, but he's done for the year with a broken foot. There's been no report yet on Caden Stearns. His is a knee injury that they're concerned about. There's still no report yet on Jalen Green. And his was either dislocated or separated shoulder.
Dislocated shoulder.
And there's been no report on the severity of that yet. So the bye week, needless to say, comes at a very, very good time. Other guys had injuries in the game that they came back from, like... Deshaun Jameson with a stinger, a couple other guys here.
Coburn got dinged at one point and came back.
But yeah, right now the bye week is coming at about as opportune a time as Texas could ask for to try and get some of these guys healthy. There's reinforcements on the way in a couple of weeks, but yeah, you know, that's what we know right now as of the injuries. And the guys who came in the fourth quarter, I mean, all you can do is just give them props, because they were doing everything they could to try and keep OSU from getting back into that football game.
Yeah, I mean, you had to play some heavy snaps between Anthony Cook and Kobe Boyce, neither of whom have covered themselves in glory up to this point in this season. Neither of them necessarily did last night, but they hung on and they hung on and survived. And yeah, both from a game plan standpoint and an execution standpoint, you know, in the passing game, they said, we're not letting Tylan Wallace beat us, kept him doubled all night, and for the most part, you know, kept guys from running free, kept guys from just, you know, ripping off 20, 30-yard gains on them. So made Oklahoma State earn everything they got. You know, unfortunately, they got quite a bit based on the legs of their freshman QB, who nearly made me throw various drinks at various spots in the house over the course of that night, as we had some really just Euclid defying angles, yeah, and ankle biting attempts,
yeah,
that were frustrating. But yeah, as far as we had a plan, we executed it, and would have probably given up 20 points or so without just
the
mind-numbing moments in special teams. Man. You've got to call that, you know, by far the most impressive defensive effort of the season. You know, one of the best efforts certainly since Todd Orlando's first year here, and something that if you can continue to build on that approach, you're looking real good to find yourself in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah.
Can Chris Adamora become the first true freshman to win the gas cam?
I think he should definitely maybe earn a nomination. Yeah, because let's get to that young man for a moment. Chris Adamora, the true freshman defensive back out of, let me find it here real quick. I had it out of Mayfair High School in Lakewood, California.
I think they had to call timeout to sew his name on the back of his jersey before he went in.
Yeah, that kid last night, I mean, wow. You know, I don't know. I read last night after the game that he had not seen live snaps all season. So that was his first action on the field, period, in a game. And that he absolutely pressed into service because of injuries. And the kid made, at the time, was maybe the biggest play of the game. You know, unfortunately, thanks to a non-called hold, it ended up not mattering, but then definitely made the play of the game on special teams. You know, he had a pass breakup in the end zone on a play where I think he's just like, I think I'm supposed to be here. Oh, there's the ball. Jump up, knock it down. And then he's over there on the hands team, which for some reason the hands team on the onside kick included number 57, Court Jacques, or Jack A, or Jacques, or Jackass.
I think it was Jack A. I think it was the star of 227.
Mary. But for some reason, that young man, no offense to him, out of sophomore linebacker to San Antonio, dude's got no business being on the hands team when you're looking for an onside kick. Had an onside kick roll underneath his body, ball gets popped up in the air, and young Mr. Adamora leapt up in the air and snagged that bad boy and pulled it down and possibly saved the game.
I think it was Jason who said that nobody with a neck roll should be on the hands team.
Yeah, just, you know, it's a rule of thumb. It's a heuristic. I don't know if analytics completely back it up, but it feels right to say that.
I would agree with that.
Yes.
But, you know, all those guys in the secondary, now, they had, like we were talking about a minute ago, a lot of issues tackling. Last night, just taking some poor angles, diving at the legs of a 195-pound quarterback and making him look like Vince freaking Young out on the football field, dodging tackles and making guys miss. And the other issue I had was guys just not fighting off blocks at all on the outside when they're getting blocked by wide receivers. It was just a very poor effort from that standpoint. But they bent, but pretty much didn't break. And so, in the end, it was a winning effort and got the job done.
Yeah, as we said, that's the kind of effort that, especially when paired with some more healthy bodies and, you know, more opportunity to continue to kind of build on this base identity that they established, can, you know, see you in the Big 12 championship game. And, you know, a lot of the reason for that is this offense is firing on at least a lot of cylinders, and, you know, they had their own personnel deficits to overcome last night, with Colin Johnson missing the game entirely. And
yeah, that was a surprise, I think, to all of us. I think most people expected him to play last night, but his hamstring apparently just wasn't ready to go.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like that's too severe, so hopefully we can expect him back at full speed when we take the field against West Virginia in a couple weeks. But, you know, the star of the passing game by far, as he's been through all season.
Duvernay.
Yes, sir. Devin Duvernay just did it again. Another dozen catches last night for, what, 112 yards or 109, something like that, including a touchdown. He was the go-to guy, and, you know, Sam tried to get a few other people involved here and there, and just couldn't quite connect consistently. Nobody else
had more than two catches.
No, there was attempts to get guys like, I know that, I think Malcolm Epps, but, they tried to go to him a few times and just couldn't make the connection. I could think of at least three plays where they tried to hit him downfield and just couldn't get it to connect. But yeah, I mean, it was Devin Duvernay and big play Brendan Eagles for his one shot a game where he apparently gets loose down the field and turns it into 6 points.
Yeah, and he did it again last night. He's living a bit of a charmed life on bizarre busted coverages that leave him streaming free down the sideline. But to his credit, even though he kind of bobbled the ball a bit when it came to him, hauled it in, you know, scored the 75-yard touchdown that blew my longest touchdown under 64.5 yards bet. But if you're going to lose that bet, that's the way I'd prefer to lose it rather than Tylan Wallace for 80. But yeah, I mean, he provides, you know, a great threat and a great complement on the outside to a hopefully healthy Colin Johnson. You know, some of the other guys, both senior John Burt and young Mr. Epps, did not appear very ready for prime time.
Well, I mean, Burt, you know, they really only tried to go to Burt once that I saw, and Sam just overthrew it a little bit. But you, once Colin is back, you have four guys that are solid rotation pieces that they really need to tighten up that rotation and only sprinkle in other guys when they kind of need to. You've got obviously Devin and obviously Colin Johnson, and then you have Eagles and you have Jake Smith. Those need to be your four guys that you rely on, I think, moving forward offensively. Sprinkle in Epps occasionally, sprinkle in Burt occasionally. But those are your guys that are going to produce and have shown it throughout the first four games of this season, and I think those are the guys they need to ride at the wide receiver spot.
I'd love to see Johnson, Duvernay, Eagles, and Smith on the field at the same time.
It is legal to actually go four wide, just in case someone over at the Texas football office is unaware of that.
Yeah. I'm not going to harp too badly on it after what was a pretty solid game from Cade Brewer, including his nifty involvement in the reverse flea flicker pass that I probably would have scored on, but you know, he had a good night, had a good night blocking. But I mean, there's probably going to come a time, and there'll definitely come a time if the defense forgets some of the lessons that it learned tonight, where you are just going to need to fire on all cylinders offensively. And when it's second and long, third and long, and you're not running tempo, I don't understand why you don't get your four best pass rushers out there.
Because last night, it was very obvious that the offensive game plan was control the clock. Because from the outset, Texas was not running very much tempo at all. They only did it a couple of times in the game that I can think of. They were purposefully trying to control the clock to keep the OSU offense off the field. And in those settings, you know, you're right. It just, you need to maximize your offensive potential if you're going to play that style. And, you know, they had a good game last night. They did. But you're right. When you're trying to, you know, really control things, that's maybe not maximizing your potential, not having your four best playmakers on the field.
Yeah. But we kind of understand what our offensive identity is at this point. The bully ball that Tom Herman wants to play is certainly going to be accentuated by Keyonte Ingram if he keeps running like this. You know, Roshan Johnson looked terrific every time he touched the ball, to my mind, you know, in the run game and the pass game.
God,
you know,
does he stick his nose up in there or what?
Really does. Yeah, that's been the most impressive thing to me. I mean, you knew he was an athlete. Mm-hmm. You knew that he was going to, if he gets a little space, you know, he can accelerate. But, yeah, just shows good instincts and just understands, you know, how to quickly hit the hole, how to quickly just aggressively press whatever's there in front of him. And, doesn't dance, doesn't get negative plays, and just, you know, is really puts a lot of things on the table.
I've been surprised as much as anything else. I mean, obviously being a quarterback, having learned this offense as a quarterback, you know that he knew more about what needed to be done at every position. But his willingness to be physical has been what's been so impressive to me. Coming from being a quarterback, yes, he was a good runner in high school, obviously. But his physicality has been quite impressive and really just awesome to see.
Yeah.
He also has great chemicalness.
can't argue with that.
Not the best color man in the business for anything.
That's right.
Yeah, and And it pairs so well with an offensive line that is finally really ready to get down and dirty, it looks like, with just about anybody on the schedule. And just blocking effectively and blocking mean. I mean, it is so fun to watch Parker Braun pull out and just look for a target. you can just almost envision the Terminator view with yes. the data scrolling down the side. Human casualties a lot. Like he had my favorite run blocking play of the night and possibly the season on. It was a nice run by Inger, but he had released to the second level, basically got up to the third level. And right as Keontae was crossing the yellow line for a first down, so was Braun pancaking a safety as he ran by. It probably wasn't even necessary, but it was fun to watch. And you know, he's been a revelation. And there's been some talk that maybe they'll just go ahead and sit him down and preserve his red shirt. I'm like, I cannot possibly imagine how that would happen.
That was a Bobby Burton creation.
Yeah, there's just no way that's happening at this point in the season. And Sam Cosmi was as good as ever last night. I mean, he had a couple of just erasures on runs as well. And, you know, he's continued to just play at an all-conference level. And, you know, I'm just lighting the candles that he somehow gets talked back into coming back for one more year at this point. But
would be nice. But yeah. And then Shackelford, who, you know, has been battling his foot injury off and on. Don't think he practiced all week long, mm-hmm. but then again was a rock in the middle of the line.
What was it you were telling us about that before the game, Craig?
Oh yeah, they just put him in glass the whole week, and then they just break the glass on Saturday afternoon, let him out, take his boot off. Let him play, then put him back in the glass.
Yeah, I'm sure he has been encased once again, and will be there for at least the next week while they get prepared for bye. But the only issues I had with the offense last night was in the fourth quarter when the offense had two chances, one after an interception and one after a short punt to salt the game away. In the fourth quarter, which this year we've seen this offense be able to move the ball when they needed to. And for whatever reason, those two possessions last night, they just kind of turtled up. Rewatching it, it wasn't so much play calling as maybe just a little bit of lack of execution. But there was a definite feel of...
They weren't aggressive.
We're not going to try and be aggressive. We just want to try and grind this clock down and end the game, as opposed to, hey, if we go score... This game's over regardless, and I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, and I'd like to see, in situations like that, I mean, you saw, you know, maybe the best play call of the night on third down on their final drive, mm-hmm. where they were facing third and long, and first down wins the game, incomplete pass, you're looking at, you know, close to 2 minutes for a, you know, rejuvenated Oklahoma State offense to go down the field and possibly win the game. So what do? You boot Sam Ehlinger out and say, go get somebody's wide ass open, hit him. If not, go get what you can. And he was able to get quite a bit. And, you know, hopefully in situations like that, you know, using his legs with the option of still getting it down the field is something hopefully we'll see a lot more of, because obviously he can throw on the run. He's dangerous in the open field. And, you know, that gives you a little bit of the best of both worlds, the chance to keep the clock moving and still, you know, set yourself up for a big play. So hopefully we'll see more of that.
Now let's talk about the just horrid wart on the back of the game last night, and that was the special teams.
Yeah, nothing worse than a back wart.
Hey, y'all follow Dr. Pimple Popper on Twitter?
No, and I don't want to.
Check into it. It's pretty gross and pretty awesome.
No, thank you. You can have that. The special teams last night, mainly the return teams on both kickoff and punt, had issues. For all of the really good work Brandon Jones did last night on the defensive side of the ball, he decided to lose his ever fucking mind in the fourth quarter on really two attempted short punts. The first one that bounced in front of him in Oklahoma State territory because he couldn't get to it and got cut off from getting to it, bounced forward, and we think may have gone off a Texas player, but Texas got it back. And then the attempted sliding catch, like he was a center fielder trying to catch a shallow pop-up, is one of the maybe all-time stupidest plays I have ever seen from a Texas player. I mean, it. Wow. I don't know where his head was, but it certainly wasn't attached to his body.
Oh, I think it might have been attached to his body. I think it might have been wedged somewhere. But yeah, I mean, yeah, coming in like you're trying to make a play on a shallow pop fly like Odubi McDowell coming in from center field. Oh,
a lot of times it didn't end well for Odubi McDowell either.
No, it didn't.
Well, I mean, and it felt like it wasn't going to end well for Texas right after that happened. And no. I was seeing red from that point until Ellinger converted that third down, and we were kneeling the ball. But I was thinking after that, like, my God, if we had lost that game. Somebody had to do a welfare check on poor Steve Ross because his Michigan Wolverines got booty blasted earlier in the day.
Our friend SRR50.
And yeah, and a man who carries the scars of the Craig Curry punt.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Closer and deeper than most. That would have been a hell of a 1-2 punch for the man to have to take, yeah. But fortunately, but I mean, didn't quite come to that.
I think
that might even make Steve break a driver.
You know, that play last night, I mean, if somebody asked Herman in the post game, I think somebody just asked him if he said anything to Brandon Jones before that last punt. And Herman said, no, I didn't get a chance to say, whatever. And my thought after seeing that response was, should he have had to? Because we're talking about a senior. Like, who has been back on many punts for the sheer purpose of making sure it gets caught, making sure nothing bad happens. He's done that many times. No one should have had to say, don't run up and try and make a 5-yard sliding grab on a short punt when you're up by 6 points. Or up by 2 touchdowns, excuse me.
Well, the good thing is, I don't think we'll have to see him do it again.
Well, I mean, it's not like, I mean, they've had basically two guys back there this season, and both of them fumbled. Yeah. I can't think of anybody else besides Jake Smith. Deshaun Jameson might have been back there earlier this year on a punt. But it's basically been Brandon Jones and Jake Smith, and they both muck punts. The one that Jake had, I mean, that was just one of those shit happens kind of things. You know, he was in position, it just went through his arms, and it just turns out.
I don't think we'll see that happen again either.
No. We'll see what happens in a couple of weeks. But, you know, they had issues on the kick returns, too. There were two short kickoffs that Texas let hit the ground just basically out of miscommunication between Smith and Duvernay. You know, one of them, Smith gave like a half fair catch signal. It hit the ground and bounced straight up in the air, and Duvernay caught it and then tried to run, but he couldn't because the fair catch signal was made. And then another one that was towards the sideline where it, a short punt, short kickoff again that hit the ground. Luckily, it kicked sideways out of bounds. Otherwise, that could have been disastrous. There were some serious communication issues last night on the returns.
Yeah, I would hope that the Riot Act has been read to whoever is running special teams. It always seems like it's an annual mystery from Mac Brown to Charlie Strong, now to Tom Herman. It's always kind of tough to put a finger on exactly which coaches are responsible for which units. And, of course, every head coach says it's all on me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, somebody, hopefully the paint has been peeled in the locker room and the coaches' meeting room.
After the second fumble muff, I did go to Twitter in a vain search for Chuck Effin Strong. Because just for old time's sake.
He's in heaven now, Craig.
That's right. He's the angel.
Let him enjoy eternity in peace.
Yes. All right. So, you know, but the bottom line is maddening and just confusing and, you know, make you want to pull your hair out too late on my end. But, you know, make you want to pull your hair out kind of game it was. Texas got the job done. You know, they broke their losing streak to Oklahoma State. They're 1-0. They've got their bye week before they have to go on the road to West Virginia. Who battled out a 5-point win against Kansas yesterday. West Virginia's not very good.
Trap game.
It is a trap game, but you would think coming off of a bye week that, you know, they would be, you know, ready for it, not looking past anything. But, you know, I mean, I guess that's the question now. It's like, what do we see? What do we think about this thing moving forward? I guess part of it's like, well, let's wait and see who we have available to play.
Yeah, I think the main thing, you know, the bye week comes, obviously. Of course, you always say this, but the bye week comes at a very opportune time because they're very banged up, and their main task right now is to get healthy. And I think there's a natural, this is kind of a natural point where you have a lesser opponent before they go to Dallas, and it gives you a chance to sort of recalibrate things and fine-tune things you want to do there. So I just, you know, I always hate a week with no Texas football, but it's the best time for it to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I think it'll be a great moment for the BC Unplugged podcast to have a versus bye week slash scatter shooting.
The trash episode next week.
Oh, yeah. We're gonna do one next week, folks, and it's going to be fun because
the ugly Johnny Dick shot baseball report. Yeah, because it'll be
about time for the playoffs to start. Time. Yep. we may have some scatter shooting with Sir Sean because, you know, Jason, you told me a story I was not aware of just as we were just getting ready to record about our friend Sir Sean.
Well, yes, there were some media reports that I had actually ridden out the recent spot of weather in the Bahamas in my home there, and I just wanted to make it clear that those reports were somewhat erroneous. I was actually riding the hurricane itself on a 25-foot longboard. And I won after beating Koch Karai in an arm wrestling contest. You know, that's a beach volleyball player. I was thinking of Laird Hamilton.
And now it's time.
But the point remains. I couldn't come up with.
Dead air.
You have to leave that in.
I look forward to hearing more about that tale, definitely in the next episode. We also I think next week would be a good time to touch on a little NFL. Cowboys 3-0 after fucking off for the first half today. They woke up in the second half and said enough of this shit with Miami and took care of business. So they're sitting at 3-0.
Now we come to tweets of the week.
Oh boy!
Actually, let's just do tweets of the day.
Tweets of the day.
The first tweet of the day comes from @GigThemOA, which I understand is one of our good bull hunting brethren.
Yes,
great guy.
Very entertaining podcast they do.
Yes, the only St. Aggies I'm aware of. He tweets: yesterday, Texas A&M lost a season-defining home game against Auburn. Hard stop. For a complete list of university traditions, please visit tamu.edu/traditions.
It's funny because it's true.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's a bit of a tough 75 mil that A&M has spent on little Jimbo and the 500 patrol.
Oh yeah.
All right, real quick, before we go any further, we do have a sponsor for the podcast this year for the Hornscast network of podcasts. It is laststandhats.com. If you go to laststandhats.com and you use the code HORNSCAST10, you'll get 10% off any item on their site. It's the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. They have a lot of great stuff on that site. You've got the Legend Series caps. You've got the Texas Fight hats and visors. They also have shirts with that similar Texas Fight logo that they have on there. They got the DBU hat. They had DBU t-shirts as well now on their site. Really great site. Small business here in Austin that has gotten going. Some good Texas gear there. Go to laststandhats.com. Again, use the code HORNSCAST10 and you'll get 10% off any item on their site. Wear your heart on your head. It's laststandhats.com. Okay. Last thing. Let's wrap this up with real quick. Guys, what has been, as we're into Big 12 play now, as you've seen, you know, some football, about a month's worth of football now, what are your thoughts on kind of how the Big 12 sits? There were some good games yesterday. SMU knocked off number 25 TCU in a really fun game to watch. You know, Texas fans have been paying attention because of Steve Buschel.
Shane.
That's the first time I've done that in a while. Because of Shane Buschel.
Last hand stats. Last hand stats.
because of Shane Buechele, and SMU went to 4-0 and knocked off TCU yesterday. They're one of the teams that I thought could be kind of back up to snuff this year. I think defensively they're pretty good. Their run game is solid, but their passing attack leaves some things to be desired. SMU has been 4-0
since they were picking cash out of cigar boxes at the Ramada Inn off Central Expressway.
It has been a hot minute for SMU to be 4-0, that is for sure. But, you know, the other games, man, Baylor just kind of held on to beat Rice down in Houston, 21-13. You had a pillow fight in Lawrence, Kansas. West Virginia beat Kansas by 5.
I think it might have been a pillow bite, actually. Yeah.
can't eliminate the possibility, that's for sure. And then Iowa State.
Do we insert the not safe for work disclaimer?
Yes. Iowa State, you know, their offense woke up, but it was against Louisiana Monroe. I mean, it woke up in a big way, but, I mean, you got to consider who they were playing. I just, you know, outside of Oklahoma, who we know is good, we're just not really going to know how good before Texas plays them on October 12th. You know, I just don't see a lot of...
Who do they have next week?
They have Texas Tech.
Of course, they without a quarterback.
Without their starting quarterback.
Who do they have the week after?
Kansas.
Yeah, so we're not going to know exactly about Oklahoma.
Right. Oklahoma has played trash this year. Houston sucks, okay? Don't tell me about Houston. Their defense sucks because, you know, the balding mullet down in Houston inherited a not-that-talented roster, especially on defense, and they're horrid on defense. UCLA is terrible. Yes, they got blackout drunk and somehow came back on the Pirate last night up in out on the West Coast up in Pullman and beat Washington State, but UCLA is not a good football team at all. Kansas is not a good football team. Texas Tech might be decent, but now they're going to play them without their starting quarterback. We're not going to know shit about OU.
Oh, I know this much about them. I wouldn't piss on any of those fuckers if they were on fire. I know that.
I would piss on them if they were on fire. I wouldn't piss on the part of them that was on fire. But I'd piss on them. But yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say that anybody in the conference has proven anything about a level of play beyond Texas. I mean, Texas has been, you know, toe-to-toe with what we can pretty comfortably say is a legitimate top five team.
Yes.
And if not for a drop pass that fortunately Keontae seems to have mentally rebounded from, that's a tie game and anybody's game at the end of the game. So that by far trumps any effort that any other Big 12 team has put forward so far this year. And, you know, there's not a lot to tell me at this point that Oklahoma State's not the third best team in the conference. And
yeah,
they may be by a decent bit, depending on whether or not Iowa State's offensive outburst against a directional school was a mirage or not.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know. I mean, TCU did go on the road and beat Purdue pretty handily up there last week, but Purdue was missing like six starters, four of them on offense. And so, I mean, that was a game where that you really couldn't get a good measure of it.
And K-State impressed at Starkville.
That's the one team that I'm looking at because K-State is 3-0. They're ranked 24th right now. They were off this weekend as well. You're right. K-State, now I don't think Mississippi State is a good team. I think they're average at best.
They went to Stark Vegas and won, dude. Have you been to Starkville?
I don't really necessarily want to go to Starkville.
I went once. It's horrible.
I mean, you know, Kansas State's the one team I look at that they may be a tough beat because they did. They went. I watched a lot of that Mississippi State game, and man, they play some tough, hard-nosed football. What's his name from South Dakota State North Dakota State that came in and took over that program? He's really got them playing really hard-nosed football right now. It doesn't seem like they have a whole lot of talent, but Kansas State usually doesn't.
Right.
You know, that might be the one team that's kind of the wild card at this point for me in the Big 12.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could make a decent amount of noise in the conference, depending on, again, kind of what we learn about, you know, Iowa State and, you know, still potentially TCU. I feel pretty comfortable saying that at least the days of Texas being hit in the mouth and folding and getting, you know, out-toughed, out-efforted, out, out-conditioned and out anything else are in our rearview mirror. So, you know, some of the losses that K-State has hung on us, you know, purely through a combination of grit and purple wizardry, I don't think we're teed up for anymore. I mean,
and we do get Kansas State in Austin. Yeah, that'll help.
But I feel good about having that game in the mental win column right now, unless something really drastic happens, or you know, somebody rolls another hand grenade into one of our unit meeting rooms. Is kind of happened to the DBs last night.
Jeez,
but yeah, I mean, I feel decently confident that we've probably played the third best team in the conference and beat them. And
at least to this point, for sure.
I feel pretty good about being on track to at least play in our ridiculous self-defeating conference championship game. And whatever happens there will determine whether this is a just another building block season or maybe one for the memory books. One for the memory books. I'm fired. The bye week couldn't come soon enough, folks. Pretty banged up on our last leg here. Just got to kind of rest and refit and caulk some holes. What? Cut!
All right, so on that note, that'll do it for this episode of Barking Carnival Unplugged.
And that was C-A-U-L-K. Yes. For the record.
Yes.
And put this in the memory books, folks. It was C-A-U-L-K.
Well, when you said that, my thought was, God damn it, he's been going through my bathroom cabinet again.
Well, before our next episode where we caulk up some more glory holes, you know, for Jason Chilton, a.k.a. Nobis 60, for Craig Douglas, a.k.a. Willie Waylon McClyde, I am Jacob Dedimore, a.k.a. Kip's Big Boy. We will have an episode for bye week, and we're going to have a little fun with it, folks, so be ready for that. Until you hear from us again, hey, everybody, have a great week, and hook 'em.